Okay.
Has anyone got any questions?
Hopefully there's something to...
Yeah.
Okay. I'm from Chicago, and there are gardens. You take over vacant lots for, they only burn down the building with insurance money and then leave it fallow.
Yep.
And then, seriously, and then
anyone
can come in and grow. But becoming England, and then especially Sheffield, you find that these aren't as land. It's difficult to get land like that. But I always wonder how we could be more innovative in camping out spots that normally are, that we don't.
Yeah.
Like, what I'm thinking of, for example, is kind of areas where you go around and you see it fallow. Something to be grown there, however small it could be. And one would be, you might do a little guerrilla sort of gardening like that, where you find a spot and plant some potatoes or whatever.
Yeah.
And no one would know the difference until something starts growing up.
Well, there's great, for us, really good initiatives along that line.
All you have to worry about is you know, the air, the pollutants in the air, because it's probably a terrible thing, and they start giving the gardeners stuff from the sludge.
Yes.
And the heavy metals.
Yeah.
And they didn't know that until after. So everyone had to pull up all their gardens after years of looking on it, because they're all heavy metals. So the whole thing, the soil testing is really critical in doing anything like that.
And then there's people's back gardens that they don't use. There's an awful lot of people's space back gardens that aren't being used. And
it's all the front and back gardens are grass. Yeah.
I think there's, is it My Backyard and, the name's, I forgot the name of the project is. There's a couple in the States where basically the initiative is they get growers. And the grower says, okay, you'd normally spend $800 a year getting a gardener in just to do whatever you do. Or a combination of you'd get a gardener in and you'd have... you'd be growing your veggies, employ us, we'll come in and garden for you and grow all the vegetables, and then in effect you're buying vegetables from your back garden instead of buying them from the shop. And then they have a whole series of back gardens, and that seems to be quite an interesting approach. So I think you're right. I think basically some of it is about actually getting people to realise what the potential is. I know in Portland, in Oregon, they're probably less worried about the rules, maybe, than I think Britain is a very tightly governed country. Everything has to be approved and agreed and gone through the committee. And I think in Portland, Oregon, they decided there was a roundabout that was terrible, so they planted it up as an orchard. Didn't ask anyone; they just dug up the road and did it, and they got into trouble. But actually, it kind of, all sorts of things happened as a result, and it actually stayed. So sometimes, and then there's a whole thing about, you know, proof that basically...
Well, someone pointed out some lovely stuff around the new route. It doesn't work very well in the new green road, but it has some nice wildflower planting.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they haven't done much traffic, but at least it's beautifully done.
Different tack. The actual kind of gardening and growing, you didn't say anything about this, but is there a theme within permaculture that the actual style of culture is I'm kind of fumbling to say this, but more kind of long term, is that you don't kind of, well, the other extreme is that you dig over the whole plot and replant it, whereas in permaculture you let things grow and harvest.
The tendency in, the thing about permaculture is primarily it's a way of designing spaces. They're normally productive spaces, so they're often gardens and parks, farms and so on. But I think that what permaculture brings is the design aspect. It definitely has a preference for more perennial plants than is maybe usual. So more fruit trees, more trees generally, more ground covers. Like a forest garden is a good example, where a forest garden is essentially, you've got ground covers, which might be, you know, strawberries, and then you'll have fruit bushes, and then fruit trees, sometimes some climbers, and you can make more or less complicated. And in that you would have very few annuals, But really, it's what's the appropriate technique. There are lots of techniques that you can use. So, for example, I know permaculture gardens holdings where they've got very intensive raised beds, which are tilled on a very regular basis, and they get lots and lots of crop out of it, lots of big yields. And then a bit further away, they've got a forest garden, and then further than that, it's virtually wild. And they've just used a different technique as appropriate to the sort of space and the amount of effort they've got for that space. So we draw on all the brilliant techniques out there, whether it's companion planting or whether it's organic gardening, or there's lots of useful stuff. So permaculture isn't a particular gardening method. It uses the gardening methods that are appropriate for the situation you're in. I think that's best answer.
You mentioned your vision for Leeds as being surrounded by market gardens. That sounds like quite a good idea for Sheffield as well.
Sure.
Have you any idea how that might come about? I mean, one idea I've kind of been looking at is community supported agriculture, and I've got this idea that maybe if enough of us in Sheffield got together, we could, get a farm on the outskirts of Sheffield and grow lots of organic food.
I suspect there are farmers out on the side of Sheffield. I mean, this is the thing that's interesting. Like in Leeds, I tossed it up on the map about 4 or 5 years ago. A few things. Basically, I had an argument with someone at Yorkshire Forward who said that food wasn't really that big a deal. I said, let's have a look at the calculator a minute. I said, so, 710,000 people in Leeds. How many times do you eat a day? Oh, 3 times 3. So that's 2.1 million. Let's say on average, a pound a meal, times one, that's 2.1 million pounds a day, times 365. It's quite an interesting. I can't remember. Anyone work that out? I can't remember what it was, but it's quite a big figure. Actually, it's a huge figure. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, yeah. Oh, actually, yes, that's quite a big market, isn't it? money. And that's one way of doing it, is pointing out the obvious bloody benefits of doing it. So that's one. There's a huge captive market. 710,000 people in Leeds, they're not going anywhere. If only they bloody would. there's some people that really do need to get out. They need to get out. But seriously, the woman opposite me, she's got 3 kids. One's died of, horrible reasons. She's not been able to take them to even Temple Newsom, right, which is a kind of a city stately home on the edge of Leeds. It's a bus ride. It's an absolute crime. There are people in, what my Uncle John would call the lumpen working class, right, that don't have the confidence, skills, whatever it is, to even get out to the edge of their own city to see something a bit different, see a bit of nature, not be surrounded by bricks all the time. Now, if a sensible city, thinking forward about the future, would say, right, okay, 710,000 people here, they eat every day, 3 times a day, 365 times a year. Right, okay. We've got 200 or 300 farms around the city. Okay, right. Let's get all the farmers together and say, did you know there are 710,000 people who are on the edge of your farm that eat 3 times a day, 365 times a year? It's the sheer weight of the logic is it should be enough to get people to start to realise actually there's so much more, because the food is just the beginning. If we had 250 farms, market garden spaces around Leeds, we'd have roughly one for every primary school. Now, if we had one for every primary school, we could say, right, let's make sure that every school had a farm that it could be connected to.
That's a free labour, isn't it?
Not far off. The Offshoots Permaculture Project in Burnley get paid by a college for their students to come and learn how to grow food, and then they get paid by the primary care trust for the food. We get paid twice for the same food. It's fantastic. So in a way, you can multifunction these things. So actually, there are multiple benefits. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing, that these farms around Leeds or Sheffield or whatever, they wouldn't just be providing our food. They wouldn't be providing all of our food. But they provide a good deal of it. But the educational benefits, the biodiversity benefits of going from English nature, quite controversially, I think about 2 years ago, they said, what is the fastest way to increase biodiversity on an average English farm? Anyone know what the fastest way to increase biodiversity on an average English farm is?
Do nothing
would probably be pretty good, but actually their controversial answer was building a housing estate on it. Because if you build a housing estate on it, and people start gardening, right, all of a sudden the number of species dramatically increases, and the range of wildlife increases as well. It's incredible. Now, I don't think we should be building over the whole green belt, but we do need much more mixed, diverse, polycultural type holdings, which are geared towards local markets, CS, you know, whether it's community supported agriculture, etc., etc. But and then there's all the other benefits. So I think we need to somehow basically get policymakers together with the farmers, have a conference, do the maths, give some inducements, get people like the hospitals and the universities and some of the major institutions to say, we'll be the CSA market to begin with. Not people that can barely scrape the money together. Let's say Leeds University or Sheffield University. Right, let's get, you know, £300,000-£500,000 contracts in place. That gives us some solidity into the system, gives us some really good planning, and starts to make farmers think, okay, this has got some backing, this is going to go somewhere. You could change the whole city's food system like that if you get the big institutions involved.
I'd say the only issue I had with the complete logic of this particular train of thought is simply that people make illogical decisions.
Of course they do.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
And the simple issue is that they can't be asked to go to the farm. So what I'm saying is that instead of bringing people to the farm, you should bring the farm to the people. And this leads into this gentleman's thing earlier about, you know, how many sites could you potentially farm in a given area? And I'm looking at Sharrow within 10 minutes, hundreds. So, you know, I think the strategy should be how you influence policymakers and actually galvanise local community into looking to their own front yard, as it were.
Yeah.
As an alternative, you know, and there are ways around that. So.
See, the only thing I disagree about what you say is, why only do one? Why not do both?
Mm. Well, exactly.
Is there any reason why? There's no single strategy that's going to do it. Is we need a strategy which is going to deal with, because the farm. See, basically, the thing is, if we don't deal with the farmers, then you've got these people saying, "Hey, well, you know, for GM, it's really good." We've actually got to really start to, as much as possible, support farmers to make the right decisions. So I think we need to engage at that level. We also need to engage with, you know, mum at home, and you can make better use of your garden and, you know, save some money on your bills. There's a whole range of strategies, and it's not that one's better than the other or more important than the other. Or
I'm merely pointing out that bringing the farm to the people is a pretty good first step to get into the people.
Yes,
to the
sure. Yeah.
Because unlike pretty much everyone here, most people don't have the time or the inclination to be involved with agriculture at all, so... you know, how do you kind of normalise the messages that work to get people involved?
Yes. Yeah.
Can I contribute something? I think it's a great idea looking at the farms around, and I think it's important to think about the topography of Sheffield. So farms on like the South Rotherham type side of Sheffield, lower ground, be more sort of good for arable vegetables and so on. But that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate farms up at Ringing, though, who are farming on high ground. I mean, really, that's high ground. So map the whole... Well, the sheep is what they're for, other places like that, yeah.
Well, the UK has been misfarmed in recent years because there's money in wheat. So the west of the country has been ploughed up, valuable pasture land, good biodiversity, plant life in it. Of cows, they've been playing up for wheat growing because there's economics of the market, the world market, undermines our plans for peri-urban agriculture, etc. Mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. You can do the small scale in the back gardens, that trying to do the larger picture, which I'm trying to be involved in myself. Very, very difficult because the economics of it, the macroeconomics, are really hard thing to break
but
through.
What a great idea to contact the farmers like. The one farm out of the city circle and the two farm out of the city circle and see what you've got.
I think as imperatives change, it would be possible. Yeah. It's like the peak off thing until you actually really got problems with water supply. You want to keep trying.
I think that's
hard to anticipate because you can't make a living from it until those situations really occur. I mean, I bring my farm to the city because I sell it to a shop. It's not that hard. You can grow it. You've still got shops you can sell it to in Sheffield. They're still there with shops, so I just take it to them. I said it for me, it's great. It's easy. You don't have to make a special effort.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems is what people actually choose to eat. And actually, a lot of people are eating kind of grain-based things, possibly potatoes and a lot of meat. Mm-hmm. And with vegetable in the world, the kind of things that are growing there on your Polish estate or in Cuba, that fantastic project that's going on. But actually, there in Cuba, they're still importing massive amounts of rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people haven't changed their eating habits.
A little bit, not. Sure.
And they're still eating a huge amount of meat, some of which they raise themselves, but a lot is imported.
Yeah.
So. There is an issue there that, you know, you could be on a housing estate and the things that actually you're most likely to be able to grow, which is fruit and veg, some tomatoes, some lettuces, stuff like that, and you think, oh, yeah, well, food, you know, you might really that slightly affects on the food, is it?
So staples are there, that's the difference. You can't grow staples. You can't grow staples easily in your own space.
So I think there's a big issue. I don't know, there's an issue there about, you know, how do you feed a town. I mean, you're not pretending that we could.
Well, I think, again, that's why the combination of what you can do in the city and what you can do around the city is so important.
Mm.
Because it's that bit around the city which then gives you the more broad-scale crops. But also, I think it's I'm not going to give up eating olives because I like them.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of trade. You've got to support the orange growers of Seville.
Yeah. So I think it's crazy to import carrots.
Mm. In terms of vitamins and minerals, local needs can supply an awful lot.
But I think also isn't that one of the things that Grow Sheffield is doing is, or maybe has intentions to do, is get people thinking about what they eat and change that, their feral habits. Question here.
Just a question about how feasible it is for permaculture to feed a massive population like Sheffield. Is it actually feasible? I don't know, this is all new to me. Is it feasible to feed large numbers like that? Or is this sort of a small scale thing? You know, it's all new to me.
I think that it's not so much whether permaculture is a design system that you can look at to see how to optimise for use of your space.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere like, say, Paris, until 1910, Paris was a net exporter of food.
Mm.
Cuba. In Cuba, I think 5 of the biggest cities are exporters of food. Havana imports some.
Vegetables.
Is it just vegetables?
It's not staples.
No, that's right.
Don't forget the thousands and thousands of acres of Cuba that are grown for tobacco. Because they need the foreign exchange.
Sure.
Please don't get too romantic.
No. Of course, it's not. It's. I think that it ultimately. I mean, this is why I stress for the phrase self-reliance, is I'm not suggesting for a minute that Sheffield could grow everything that it needs. The point is, it's like at the moment there's a question is in around, you know, the sort of food circles, which is, can Britain feed itself? And I think there's a very simple question, very, very simple answer, which is, if we could be bothered. It's quite simply, if we could be bothered then of course we could. It's whether we can be bothered. It's basically easier just to import it. So it's if we can be bothered, and how bothered we are depends on how much it's costing us, whether we're able to get good quality food from elsewhere, etc., 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 all sorts of other factors. So I suspect the amount of food that's grown in Sheffield will increase a bit because of the sort of enthusiasm of groups like this. But it won't, the amount of food grown in Sheffield won't increase substantially until, as you say, the kind of the big economic picture shifts. You know, things like phosphorus and the other inputs that are used on farms, until that, when that starts to make a significant impact on the price of food, then it will start to look much more economic to grow more locally.
Probably phosphorus, and so there's loads of it in soil, it's just that unless the soil's biologically active, it sits there not being used. That's what the farms.
Yeah,
maybe
there's also. That, yeah.
Stop, but it is true.
Something that I think about is the Second World War, you say about digging for victory, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so everyone dug up their own back gardens, everyone, you know, and then all these trees were chopped down as well to sort of try and grow food on.
Yes.
So, I mean, surely if we had no food, that would happen anyway, wouldn't it? So.
Yeah, that was born out of necessity, though.
But that's what I'm saying, that until that happens, until people need to do it, because they'll either die from starvation or dig up their nice little flowers in their back garden, they won't do it, so.
But by then it might be too late. Yeah. I mean, unless you already know how to do it, you can't get instant results.
I think if you learn to do things very quickly when you need to know.
I mean, it's true, but I think this the point is really, with foresight, we can see that climate change, all these issues are going to hit us at some point. They already are. They are. They really are.
Well, they are.
And we've got enough foresight, hopefully, to see that the way we need to go is to become more self-reliant locally. Not self-sufficient, but much more self-reliant. The challenge for a group like you is how to make it fun and enjoyable and something that people want to do. Just, it's the thing to do, not because of any bad, terrible reason, but because it's more enjoyable. It's a kind of, what it becomes the logical thing to do, but the kind of funky thing to do.
But Andy, I think you have to make it real as well. My food image of the last couple of days is, I drove back from Bournemouth. Monday, I think, in a blizzard, and the guys were out in the huge fields of cauliflowers, picking cauliflowers in a blizzard to supply for probably Eastern European labour for being paid £3.50 an hour or £2 a cauliflower. Now, you know, is that a real image of growing local food, or your picture with the sun shining? I think you've got to tinge these things with reality as well.
Well,
I was bloody glad I was sitting in a nice warm car.
Of course,
not
for sure.
Blizzard cutting cauliflower.
Yeah, for sure. which is absolutely why I think we've got to engage farmers. That's absolutely why we've got to engage. What we do in the urban spaces is important because it changes the way people think about food, and it changes the way people that garden more are more likely to buy organic food. That's the evidence. Now, people that buy organic food are more likely to buy local food. That's the evidence. So if in the cities we change the way people think about food, ultimately what we're doing is we're making it more likely that our local farmers are going to be successful. And that is going to be the bedrock of Sheffield's food. Is actually, it's for guys that get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and milk the cows or make sure that the sheep are all right because it's been a blizzard for last night, or there's cauliflowers to pick and it's blooming freezing. You're right. You know, that's absolutely why I think it's that the bit outside is so crucial. But they're both important.
I'm going to make a comment, then I'll have another thing, a couple more questions because I'm following you on the socials.
Yeah, no, sure.
So, I just think, well, you kind of just answered the question, but I think it is about culture change. You know, growing in cities, it's not about self-sufficiency, it's about connecting with food. Once you connect with food, you start thinking about where the food comes from, then you'll start maybe looking about where the food went before that came from, maybe not liking the system or wanting a different system, reconnecting with the countryside.
Yeah.
And the countryside coming to the city, and the city coming to the countryside.
Yeah.